Welcome to Base by Base.
Great to be here.
Okay, so let's start with something pretty universal. Welcoming a new baby. It's this huge moment, right? Full of hope, excitement, maybe a little bit of panic.
Definitely sleep deprivation.
Yes, that too. Yeah. And part of welcoming that baby for decades now has been newborn screening, that little heel prick test they do.
A standard practice.
It screens for just a handful of serious conditions, things that are treatable if you catch them super early. And it's been, you know, a quiet public health success story.
Absolutely. Standard screening, looking at those biochemical markers, it saved countless lives, prevented disability. It really works by getting that early intervention for conditions that used to be just devastating, a vital safety net.
But now, things are changing, fast. We're kind of on the cusp of a whole new era, the genomic era, for newborn care.
That's right.
Imagine instead of just those few markers, you could actually read a baby's genetic code right from the start. That's the idea behind genomic newborn screening, or GNBS.
Yeah, the potential is huge. Instead of a few dozen conditions, you could potentially screen for hundreds, maybe even thousands, of genetic diseases much, much earlier than we ever could before.
Which sounds amazing. Earlier diagnosis, maybe earlier treatment, better outcomes.
Exactly. For a whole range of conditions that are individually rare, but, you know, add them all up and it's a significant health burden, this offers real hope.
Okay, but it's never that simple, is it? Going from this is possible to actually doing it for every single baby, that opens up a whole can of worms. Practical questions, ethical ones.
Big time. Like, how do you even decide which conditions to include when you can find so many things? Some might not have treatments, some might only develop later in life, some might not even be certain to develop at all.
And how do you talk to new parents about this? I mean, giving them complex, maybe uncertain genetic information right after their baby is born, that's a lot.
It is. And that leads to the really crucial question. What do the people, this is all for the public, parents, what do they actually think? What do they value in a program like this? What are they okay with?
Precisely. And that's exactly what we're exploring today. We're looking at a fascinating study out of Australia. It's by Dr. Ricardo Peters and our colleagues, and it was published in the American Journal of Human Genetics in 2025.
Right. And they tackled this head on. Their goal wasn't just to ask, do you support GNBS, yes or no? They wanted to quantify what the Australian public really prioritizes. What features matter most when it comes to the conditions included, and also how the whole thing is run, how it's delivered.
So how did they get at those priorities? It wasn't just a simple survey, right?
No, they used a method called a discrete choice experiment, or DCE. It sounds a bit technical, maybe, but the idea is quite intuitive.
Okay, break it down for us, like the ice cream example.
Exactly like the ice cream example. Instead of asking, do you like this program, you show people different versions of a hypothetical GNBS program. Each version has different features, different attributes. Maybe one costs more but finds more conditions. Another is free but only finds severe conditions. One gives results in person, another online.
Ah, okay. So you present these different packages, these scenarios.
Yep. And you ask people, which of these would you choose? Or maybe would you choose any of these or just stick with standard screening? By looking at the patterns of choices across thousands of people,
you can figure out how much they value each individual feature. Like, how much is finding more diagnoses worth compared to a lower cost? Or how important is getting results in person?
Precisely. It forces people to make trade-offs, just like in real life, and that reveals their underlying preferences and how much weight they put on each attribute.
Okay, that makes sense. And who took part in this study? Who were they asking?
Dr. Peters and her team surveyed a pretty large group, 2,509 people from the general Australian public. They recruited them through an online panel, making sure the sample was representative in terms of age, gender, income, where they lived. So trying to get a real cross-section of the population.
Not just genetics experts or people already involved.
Right. The idea was to capture broader public opinion.
And you mentioned they looked at both the program's features and how it's delivered. So they used two different DCEs.
Exactly. They split it logically. First, there was the value DCE. This one focused on the core features of the program itself. Things like,
okay,
what kinds of conditions should be included? Severe only, moderate, mild. How certain should it be that the person will actually develop the condition? Does there need to be a cure, or is managing symptoms okay? How many extra diagnoses would this program find compared to standard screening? How accurate is the test? And Critically.
The cost.
The out-of-pocket cost. That was a key attribute in the value DCE.
Okay, so that's the what about the second DCE?
That was the implementation DCE. It looked at preferences for how the program actually runs day to day.
Like the logistics.
Sort of, yeah. Like who should give you the initial information about GNBS, your GP?
My midwife.
When you get it. And then how should results be returned? Does it matter if it's a high chance result versus a low chance one? Who should give you those results? A genetic counselor? Your regular doctor? And how? In person? Over the phone? Through secure website? What about support materials, leaflets, websites, appointments, even things like storing the data for future use? All those practical delivery questions.
Right, that makes a lot of sense to separate those two aspects. Okay, let's get into the findings then, starting with the value DCE, what the public values about the program itself. What was the big picture?
Well, the overall picture was pretty positive. A large majority, actually 90% of the people surveyed, said they were interested in receiving GNBS results if a program was offered. So there's definitely initial public interest there.
Okay, high interest. But when you make them choose, make those trade-offs in the DCE, what really drove their decisions? What mattered most?
Hands down, the single most important factor influencing whether people would choose to opt into a hypothetical GNBS program was the cost. Specifically, the out-of-pocket cost to them.
Cost is king. Not surprising, I guess, in any healthcare context.
No, it often comes up.
Yeah.
But it was really the dominant factor here. After cost, test accuracy was also very important. People want to know the test is reliable.
Makes sense. What else?
They also clearly value programs that could find more conditions. The potential to get more diagnoses, to identify more affected newborns compared to the standard screening, that definitely added value in their eyes.
Okay, and this is where it gets really interesting, right? Because finding more conditions often means going beyond those classic severe childhood onset diseases with clear treatments.
Exactly. To increase the number of diagnoses, you inevitably start including conditions that might be, well, a bit messier.
So what was the trade-off there? What were people willing to accept to get those extra diagnoses?
This is one of the most revealing parts of the study. To get a program that finds more conditions, the Australian public, in this hypothetical setting, showed they were willing to accept screening for conditions that were less severe, so including moderate and even mild conditions, not just profound ones. Also, conditions with less certainty of developing, so maybe only a greater than 50% chance the person will actually get sick, not the near certainty often required now.
Wow.
And maybe most surprisingly, conditions with less effective treatments, including those where you can only manage symptoms, or maybe where there isn't even a specific treatment available right now.
So the drive to find more seems really strong. People are saying, okay, tell us, even if it's less severe, less certain, or lacks a perfect cure, that feels like a big shift.
It does feel like a shift from the traditional screening philosophy. But, and this is really important, but the study found a fascinating nuance here.
Okay.
While people valued the outcome, getting more diagnoses, they still had reservations about the characteristics of those less certain or less treatable conditions.
What do you mean? How did they show that?
Well, the analysis allowed them to look at it this way. Imagine two programs that find the exact same number of additional diagnoses, say 30 extra cases per 1,000 screened. If one program achieves that by only including severe, highly certain treatable conditions, and the other achieves it by including a mix, including some milder, less certain, or untreatable ones, people preferred the first program.
Ah, I see. So even though they want the number of diagnoses that comes from, including the wider range, if they could get that same number with only the cleaner conditions, they'd prefer that.
Exactly. There's what the researchers call a disutility, a sort of negative value associated with the uncertainty, the mildness, or the lack of treatment. People value finding more, but they are still somewhat uncomfortable with the implications of finding those less clear-cut conditions. It highlights a real tension.
That perfectly captures the dilemma, doesn't it? How do you balance wanting to find everything possible with the potential anxiety and burden of finding things you can't fix or aren't even sure will happen? Did they put a number on the overall value?
They did. Using willingness to pay estimates derived from the DCE choices, they calculated that the Australian public valued a GNBS program finding between 10 and 50 additional diagnoses per 1,000 babies, screened at somewhere between AU 4,600 and $5,700 per newborn.
Wow. Per baby screened.
Per baby screened. So that's roughly, what, US $3,000 to $3,700? It gives a tangible sense of the value people perceive in this kind of expanded screening. which is useful for health economic modeling.
Definitely. Was everyone on board, though? Or was there variation?
There was variation. While most people, 87%, had a positive preference overall, there was a smaller group, about 13%, who consistently showed a negative preference in the choices they made.
Any idea who was more likely to be positive or negative?
Yeah, the study found that younger participants, people who said they were already somewhat familiar with genetics, and those who described themselves as less risk-averse, tended to have a more positive view of GMBS.
Interesting. That suggests maybe education and how you frame the risks and benefits could influence uptake.
Could be, yeah. Tailoring communication might be important.
Okay, let's pivot to the other side then, the implementation DCE. How did people want this program to actually work? How should it be delivered? Let's start with getting the initial information.
Right. So before any screening happens, when parents were first learning about GMBS, the preference was quite clear. People preferred to get this information from their GP, their primary care doctor, or their obstetrician.
More so than a midwife or a nurse.
Yes, those options were less preferred in the choices people made. Which is interesting, as you said earlier, midwives often handle the standard screening discussion.
Yeah, that suggests a potential need for significant GP and obstetrician training and support if GMBS rolls out. They'd be the front line for explaining something quite complex.
Absolutely. Workforce readiness is a huge implementation factor.
Okay, what about getting the results back, especially the ones that might indicate a problem? The high chance results.
For high chance results, there was a very strong preference to receive that news from a genetics health professional, like a genetic counselor or clinical geneticist.
That makes intuitive sense. You want an expert for serious news.
Right. And how they got the news mattered too. In-person delivery was the most preferred method.
Face to face.
Though telehealth, like a video call and a standard phone call, were also seen as acceptable alternatives, what was clearly not preferred for high chance results was receiving them through an electronic portal or email.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to just get a ping on your phone with potentially life-altering news.
Seems not. That personal expert interaction was highly valued for difficult results.
What about the flip side, the low chance results? Basically the all clear, surely people are happy with just an email then.
You'd think so, right? For convenience. But actually, no. This was one of the more surprising findings. Even for low-chance results, where no increased risk was found, participants still preferred receiving that information in person over getting it electronically.
Really? Even for good news, they still want an appointment.
That's what the preference data showed. It suggests people value that confirmation, maybe the chance to ask, are you sure everything's okay? Or just get that human reassurance, even when the result itself is negative. It challenges assumptions about purely digital delivery being sufficient, even for low-risk results.
Fascinating. So it sounds like the who and the how of communication were really dominant factors in how people want this delivered.
Definitely. When they ranked all the implementation attributes by importance, the number one factor was how high chance results are returned, in person versus phone, etc. Number two was who provides the initial information, GPO versus midwife. Number three was how even low chance results are returned. And number four was who returns the high chance results. Genetics professional.
Communication, communication, communication through trusted professionals.
That seems to be the core message, yes.
What about things like brochures, websites, extra appointments for support? Did specific support materials matter much?
This is another slightly unexpected finding. The participants didn't show a strong statistical preference for having specific support materials, like a leaflet, an online portal, or a dedicated appointment, compared to the option of having no specific support material offered in the DCE.
Huh. So the fancy website or the glossy brochure didn't sway their choices much?
Apparently not in this context. It might suggest, again, that people place the highest value on the quality of the direct interaction with the healthcare professional and perhaps see these other materials as secondary or maybe less crucial than getting that core communication right.
Okay, so left brain synthesize this. We've gone through the value people see in GMBS and how they'd prefer it to be implemented. What are the main takeaways from Dr. Peter's study?
I think there are a few key headlines. One, the Australian public shows considerable interest in GMBS, but cost is a major barrier. Affordability is paramount. Two, people value finding more diagnoses and seem willing to broaden screening criteria to achieve that, accepting less severe, less certain, or less treatable conditions. But there's a tension there. They still inherently prefer the cleaner cases if possible. It's a trade-off.
The complexity trade-off.
Exactly. Three, how the program is delivered matters hugely. People want information and results from trusted health professionals, GPs and obstetricians for the intro, genetic specialists for the results. And they value that personal interaction, preferring in-person communication even for low-chance results, which is quite striking.
And they preferred an opt-in consent process as well, right?
Yes, that came through strongly too, aligning with many ethical recommendations. Explicit opt-in was preferred over opt-out or mandatory screening models.
So, putting this all together, what does it mean for actually setting up a GNBS program? What are the implications or challenges?
Well, it flags some major hurdles. Health systems need to think really hard about training and supporting GPs and obstetricians to have these initial complex conversations. And they need sufficient genetics workforce capacity to deliver results in the preferred manner, ideally in person.
Which costs money and resources.
Absolutely. And it highlights that simply rolling out a digital platform might not meet public preferences, especially for results delivery. Balancing these strong preferences for personal interaction with the practicalities and costs of the healthcare system will be a major challenge.
And we should also touch on the limitations the authors themselves pointed out.
Of course. It's crucial. They noted, first, this was hypothetical, what people say they'd choose in a survey might not perfectly match real-world decisions made under emotional pressure.
Sure.
Second, recruitment was via an online panel, so there's always a potential for bias.
Yeah.
Maybe people who are more online or more interested in health topics are overrepresented. And importantly, they couldn't include every possible attribute, things like finding carrier status or long-term data storage implications weren't explicitly tested in these DCEs. And a really key one they highlighted,
the lack of race and ethnicity data.
Exactly. They didn't collect data on participants' race or ethnicity. And that's a significant gap because we know health beliefs, trust in the medical system, and access to care can vary across different cultural and ethnic groups.
So these findings might not represent the preferences of all communities within Australia, particularly Indigenous Australians or other minority groups.
That's the concern. To ensure any future GMBS program is equitable and doesn't worsen existing health disparities, it's absolutely vital that future research actively includes and understands the perspectives of diverse populations. That point cannot be stressed enough.
A critical area for future work then. So reflecting on all this, what's the final thought you're left with? As this technology races ahead, this ability to see so much in our genome right at birth.
I think it really underscores the fact that technology alone isn't the answer. Implementing something like GMBS successfully isn't just a scientific challenge. It's deeply social and ethical.
Yeah.
How do we make sure these powerful tools align with what society actually values? How do we navigate that tension between wanting to find more conditions and dealing with the uncertainty that often comes with it? This study gives us valuable clues about public preferences, at least in Australia, but it also shows just how complex these choices are.
It really does. It leaves you thinking, how do we build these programs in a way that's not just technically possible, but also ethically sound, publicly acceptable, and truly equitable for everyone? What stands out most to you listening to this?
It emphasizes the need for continuous conversation between scientists, doctors, ethicists, policymakers, and crucially, the public, as we figure out the best path forward.
This episode is based on an open access article under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License, CCBOY 4.0. You'll find the DOI and a link to the license in the episode description.